Hour number three of the program gets underway. I'm John Wilkerson, Vince Ferrara pinch-hitting for Jimmy Hyams. And, Vince, it was, nice recognition for Josh Heupel. And as he shared as it wound up, the Steve Spurrier Award that goes to a first-year coach. Doesn't have to be a first-year head coach. It's just a coach in his first season with his program. And as you mentioned, Coach Heupel is now a two-time winner.
Yeah, won it his first year at UCF as well. So he talked to the media in the after being recognized and named. It was actually Ryan McGee from ESPN that introduced him and announced him as one of the co-winners, along with Shane Beamer from South Carolina. He took some questions after some opening comments. So here's Josh Heupel at that Zoom media avail with the Football Writers Association after earning that Steve Spurrier Award last night.
Coach Steve Spurrier, the head ball coach, has done it at an unbelievably high level for such a long time. Hall of Famer as a player and as a coach. And I think the unique thing for me being in this conference is him have a true understanding of what it takes to compete in America and absolutely everything that they do to promote our game. They're great conduits of the game of football, and thank them so much for that. Chris Doering, what he does as an ambassador for the game of college football and what he's done with this award, appreciate his involvement. I want to congratulate Shane Beamer on the season that he and South Carolina had this year. And most of all, any individual honor is really a recognition of everything that's going on inside of our program and the people that are in place there at Tennessee, from our on-field assistant coaches to the young coaches that we have in the building, to our support staff, and most importantly, our players. Over the last 12 months, the growth inside of our program of who we are, how we conduct ourselves, and how we interact and are connected with each other every single day is the reason that we were able to have a successful season in year one. And as good as it was, we are so excited about the future of Tennessee football. That's because of the people and the young men that we have inside of the building. The best is truly yet to come. So excited about the leadership that we have in our program at the presidential, chancellor, and athletic director levels, and the leadership that we have inside of our program. So excited about the future of Tennessee. Go Big Orange.
And Josh, when you went to Central Florida, you inherited a team that was undefeated. You go to Tennessee, and it wasn't quite the same. Talk about the challenge of Tennessee and rebuilding that job versus when you took over at Central Florida.
Yeah, I think the challenge were two completely different things as far as the program and what they had experienced the season before. Every time you take over a new program, there's going to be a different challenge. And that's just, you know, where you're at, where you're recruiting, who's inside of the building, and what are the, you know, the challenges or successes that they've had the previous year. And coming to Tennessee, obviously, there was a lot of outside noise. We were able to quiet the storm, quiet the chatter. Our kids bought in immediately into what we're doing. They understood that the connection and accountability were going to be extremely important in the success that we were going to have. We never placed a ceiling in what our players inside of the program could do. We believed that there were great players inside of it. They bought into it, and they worked extremely hard. And as well as we played at times last year, we were disappointed when the outcome wasn't what we wanted because we knew we had enough to go win on those days. Excited about the future, what we've been able to do in year one, but what we're able to build upon here as we get started in year two when our kids get back to campus next Monday.
Hey, Josh, congratulations. You kind of talked about it right there from Jimmy's question, but just going back and taking that job, we're coming up on a kind of a week from the anniversary of you taking the job at Tennessee. When you walked into this position, there were a lot of things going on behind the scenes, and especially with the players. Can you talk about that just for a little bit, how you came in, tried to set forth what you were about to try to win the players over, which I think amounted to the success that you guys had this season?
Yeah, there was a lot of outside noise and in some ways uncertainty. A good amount of young men had entered into the transfer portal and had gone somewhere else. As an outsider that had watched Tennessee, you know, my dad being a longtime coach growing up in the game, but then being a competitor inside of the league at a previous stop and having an opportunity to truly see what Neyland Stadium was like and what game day environment was like, what ball walk, what the Vol Navy looked like outside of the stadium, the passion and pageantry that is Tennessee football, I just believed in the future and what was there, and believed in that if you get the right alignment and administration, are able to hire great people, you can go accomplish and gain ground every single day and accomplish great things. Our players bought in, and some of that happened over time. Some of it happened, you know, after our first meeting. I knew that they wanted a different culture. They were high-level competitors that came to Tennessee to play and win in the big football games. That was a very prideful group that was sitting inside of that team room, and they were willing to accept some change, to be truthful and honest and transparent in the communication. That's why we were able to grow so quickly.
Josh, you know, so much went right, and you had some limitations as far as a roster standpoint. I'll ask you a golfing question because I know your daughter loves it and Spurrier loves it. If you could have a mulligan about this year, what would your one mulligan be that you'd love to do over?
I'd take any of the losses and replay them against Purdue. At the same time, that doesn't define where we're going. So excited about the future of what we have and who's coming into the building. And really the passion that our players have for one another and continuing to compete and get better. High expectations from inside of the locker room. We've got great expectations outside of the building as well. Our fans are excited about the future.
Patrick Brown?
Josh, you said a few times during this that there was no ceiling and no limitations on what they could do.
I think in each phase, each quarter of your offseason, from offseason conditioning, you know, second phase spring ball, third phase summer workouts to training camp, there was a continued growth in the belief that, man, maybe we have a chance to be a really good football team. For some players, that belief probably started a little bit earlier than for others. For our coaching staff, I think as coaches, you're constantly looking at how you need to grow. We were able to add some players to transfer in. It's a great opportunity for the guys that we're recruiting to come in and have an opportunity to compete. Last fall, and our guys saw, you know, the consistency of how they were playing and competing and what we thought we were going to be able to do in all three phases of the game. I think there was a lot of growth in what we were doing and some confidence. And in some ways, a couple of the early season setbacks, losing a close ball game, but being able to go back and show them how we can change the outcome of a game with some small things that we control, I think got them to truly understand and buy into us having a really successful season.
Josh, about a dozen years ago, there was a basketball coach at Tennessee that when he inherited the program, he said that the players were willing to listen to him because they wanted to win. Did you find some of that when you took over, that there were players that had not won, they were more willing to listen to you to show the direction of what it would take to win?
Yeah, I think, you might have asked the question, the difference in, you know, the two programs that have taken over. Because of what had transpired the previous year, they were absolutely open to listening to what are the things that I think needed to change to give us the ability to be successful and to win football games. Very open to that. You had to constantly show them what that actually looks like as you implement it into your daily life, into your practice habits, into who we are ultimately on the game field.
Hey, Josh, winning this award this year, you probably wouldn't be in this spot if you didn't have the buy-in from the seniors and the super seniors that stuck with your program and hung around. What can you say about them? A lot of them have played their last game at Tennessee, but from them buying in from the day one that you got there to where you are right now, what did that group mean to you?
Yeah, that super senior group, the guys that finished up, their ability to not pay attention to the outside noise, to be the calm in the storm, to rally the guys around them inside of the program, to represent everything that is good and what the word volunteer means. It's a group that I'll forever be indebted to, and really our program is too. As they help build the cornerstone pieces to our program as we grow forward and compete and win championships, those guys will always have a huge piece of that.
Comments from Tennessee coach Josh Heupel.
Yeah, buy-in obviously very important, especially with those older guys. And you know, that you heard several times that not having a ceiling for what they could accomplish this year. You know, when he said that early on in his tenure, a lot of people were like, yeah, whatever, because team's not going to be very good. You're possibly, you know, facing, you know, you have the NCAA stuff hanging over you, the investigation. Who knows if you're going to have to self-impose. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't great expectations this year. So I think in the minds of a lot of people, there was a ceiling, but he didn't look at it that way. And then still got to seven wins with obviously a great opportunity for an eighth win. And they looked better than just the number. It's one thing Correct. To exceed the expectation in terms of wins, but they look better in doing so and being competitive against the really good teams that they lost to and not having stinker games, not losing to someone that they had no business losing to, and blowing out lesser competition. And so they passed the eye test in a lot of ways, although not perfect. So, yeah, I think him not having that ceiling with his team this year gave them confidence, and they played throughout the year with confidence, not only that they could be better football players, but confidence that the coaching staff knew what they were doing, mm-hmm. so they would trusted them and put in the work and then saw some results on the field.
Yeah, that was so many different things stood out in terms of, first and foremost, just the way that Josh Heupel and his staff went about getting to know and getting comfortable with these players and allowing the players to get comfortable with them.
Right.
When you take a look at whether it's going to the bowling alley or playing dodgeball, I mean, it was just one thing after another that they utilized some of the free time that you had during the summer to just kind of have fun. I mean, for lack of just go out there and have fun being around one another. And I think that's something that paid off in a big way, because you never saw at one instance, really, anybody rowing in a different direction. And we got to hear from a number of different players and to hear what they had to say in terms of what their individual experiences were like, as well as to hear some of the veterans talk about how they were motivated to make sure that this year was what they would be remembered for, as opposed to the disaster that was 2020. So when you hear guys like Butler or Jackson, Velus Jones, you could just go down the list. Guys who, whether they had been here 2 years or whether they had been here 5 or 6 years, they were really motivated that if this was going to be their last year in the orange and white, it was going to be something that everybody was going to work hard to make it the best year possible. And again, 7-6, not the standard at the University of Tennessee. But for this team to do that this year, sure, they didn't make the most of all the opportunities. It could have easily been 8 wins, 9 wins, and even get to 10 if you go to favorable spots or the lack thereof in some instances. But still, I just think that the way this team from top to bottom stuck together was really enjoyable to watch.
I think you mentioned it and setting the foundation with the relationship building and the having fun. And if you at least have that, then you can have the buy-in, you can have the camaraderie. And with a lot of those players, Velus Jones comes to mind the most. So much pride in being a member of the University of Tennessee. That's something that Velus Jones will have pride in his entire life, mm-hmm. and wave that orange and white flag. So he played like it. And I'm sure that rubbed off on his teammates. And you know, I remember even one time Alante Taylor, I think, might have mentioned, or maybe Javonte Payton, how, you know, in their open week, they actually came back early because they wanted to be around their guys before, you know, when it was required for them to come back. That tells you that they had fun around the building, which was clearly a far cry from 2020.
Should mention that we've got some sound in regards to Tennessee basketball that we'll share with you between now and the end of the hour. We also look forward to coming up with a nice trivia question to start our final hour of the program. And then we look forward to being joined by the television voice of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Our friend John Michael will join us at 6:15. And then Vince, snow on the ground. That means it's time for
Tennessee baseball and softball.
That's right. So Tony Vitello will join us around 6:35 as practice started Saturday for the Tennessee Volunteers. The softball team has already been practicing, and so they also had to work around some very interesting conditions. But their season right around the corner, as it is for the Volunteers, and can't wait for the Diamond Sports to get fired up.
Yeah, just a few weeks away.
Yep, that is for sure. But why don't we go ahead and hear from one of Tennessee's players, as the Volunteers tonight are in Nashville to take on Vanderbilt. That is a 9 o'clock Eastern time tip. There are two other games. It's just three games on the schedule tonight around the Southeastern Conference. And then Tennessee and Vanderbilt will be the late game. As far as the first game, it'll be South Carolina. The first two games, because both go at 7 Eastern. South Carolina at Arkansas, 7 o'clock Eastern time start. Missouri at Ole Miss, also a 7 o'clock Eastern time start. As well as Tennessee at Vanderbilt, 9 o'clock. Is when that game gets underway. Coverage starts on these airwaves around 8:30. So why don't we hear what Justin Powell had to say? He was made available yesterday along with Coach Rick Barnes. But here is what Powell, the Kentucky native, had to say about learning from Tennessee's loss in Lexington.
You know, after the game in the locker room, a couple people were like, you know, you just got to go past this one, you know, think on the next one. But, you know, a couple people stood up and were like, no, you know, you got to think about this. Let it soak in. You got to realize that we did not play great on the defensive end and, you know, realize what just happened. But, you know, reality is we lost and was not one of our better games, but we got to keep on going. You know, we have a game tomorrow and, you know, there's plenty more games ahead, and that's what we got to think about. And even then, like, we'll see him again. So you just got to be prepared for the next one.
Here's what Powell had to say when he was asked about his mindset.
Just playing my role to win. You know, anything it takes, you know, just get the job done. Not really thinking about anything, you know, shooting, defense, you know, all that will come if you're just trying to do your role. But you just got to play, and hopefully we play to win at the end of the day.
And Vince, as we talked about, this, it's been a priority for him to focus on being the best defensive player he can be. And I do think that that is something that, one, he's making headway in, and then he also realizes that goes with the territory if he wants to get minutes.
Yeah, and it's really like, when I talk to him about it, it really compares to like a running back earning snaps based on how he pass protects. If you can't pass protect, they're not going to put you on the field, even if you're a dynamic back. Some coaches. So that's kind of the situation for Justin Powell. If he can't defend, Rick Barnes isn't going to give him as many minutes. So, you know, and then in past games, prior to this Kentucky game, he had been passing up on his three-point shots when he had them. There's that balance in there somewhere. They got to find it to get the most out of him.
And here's what Powell had to say when he was asked about his defense.
You know, I can always get better at it. You know, past couple weeks I've gone up and I've tried to guard Kennedy the whole time at practice and guarding him the entire practice because, you know, if I can guard him, you know, I can pretty much guard anybody, I feel like. So going and guarding him every single day, I feel like that's going to be better. And just going and having that mindset that, you know, I can be a defensive stopper and nobody's going to get by me.
I think one thing that stands out in having had the opportunity to catch up with him right at the start of the season, it was during media day for Tennessee basketball, and then, like you, had the chance to catch up with him, talk to him while the team was up in Connecticut. I think he's got a fantastic attitude, and as he has said point blank, it's he's willing to do whatever is asked of him, whether it's start as he was pressed into the starting lineup at one point in time, and then if it's about him coming off the bench, then he'll embrace that role. He just wants to do anything that he can do to help this team win.
Well, because he's not maybe not getting the type of minutes, maybe he, who knows what he expected. I know fans expected him to play more or clearly hoped. He's got to be ready when he gets his opportunity. And so he can't let that defense impact his offense. And if he gets those shots and Rick Barnes wants him to take those shots, he's got to do it. So that's where being ready for your opportunity, I think, will create more of those minutes moving forward.
I think so. And as far as the team, again, this is the opportunity to hit that reset button. And you just, I mean, everything seemingly was going in for Kentucky. It was amazing to see the number they put up when it came to their first half. Close to eight. I mean, it was better than 70%. It was remarkable just what they threw up towards the basket. At one point in time, I believe it was into the final 5 minutes of the game that I heard Bert Bertelkamp say, they've missed 8 shots. That's it.
Yeah.
And they were, his contention was, it's not as though Tennessee was out of position. It's just that what they were doing wasn't working. And Kentucky did a marvelous job of finding open guys and or just going to the basket. I think it was the aggressive drives to the basket that got the team off to such a great start that when they went to the basket, they then could flip it back to the open guys that were on the wing and beyond the arc. And it really was just one of the more impressive offensive performances you could ever hope to see.
Well, and you don't often see a team shoot at that kind of clip, both from the field and from three-point range in the game. I think it had only happened once with like 65% from the floor, 60% from three in a game out of all of them this year. With the drives to the basket, another problem is that Oscar Tshiebwe is such a threat that you can't leave. The bigs wouldn't come help side on those drives because they were boxing out trying to contain Tshiebwe for a rebound. Well, not a rebound available when they're making an easy layup.
Yeah. And as far as Vanderbilt tonight, Tennessee is the favorite going in, but this is a team in Vanderbilt that is 2-2 in SEC play. They have a win at Arkansas, and they have a victory over Georgia. So this is a team that I think is anxious for the opportunity to go up against the Volunteers. But if Tennessee plays, as Tennessee can play, Tennessee should win.
Yeah, you would think so. Tennessee, though, that defense that they've really hung their hat on, a lot of those have been in home games. Mm-hmm. And so that defense needs to travel for them. The defense that they've played at home. And Tennessee hasn't won on the road in conference play so far. So that they're going to have to show something different than what they have seen this year. And then obviously Scottie Pippen Jr.
Yes.
Is going to be difficult to deal with. Leads the league in points per game at 18.8. In conference games is actually up to 21 points per game. So he's tough to deal with. I think they're waiting on their transfer big to be available. So maybe Tennessee, if Tennessee's post players are ready to play tonight, maybe they can get some things done. But man, Scottie Pippen Jr. is going to be a handful for Kennedy Chandler. And, you know, hopefully Kennedy Chandler is going to be a handful for Scottie Pippen Jr. if Tennessee wants to, you know, do some things to try to win this game.
Yeah. Now, it should be noted that Tennessee's, and they are, 2-0 at home in league play, 0-3 on the road in Southeastern Conference action. Yep. There are three road games at Alabama, at LSU, and at Kentucky.
And the best of those three was the game they didn't have Chandler and Fulkerson.
Correct.
At Alabama. So
here's in a position to win and did not get the job done.
Here's my thing with the schedule, John, and Rick Barnes has talked about it, mentioned it several times, and how difficult the schedule is, and it is very difficult. I think that can potentially help them long term, and I'm always in favor of the tough schedule. But they didn't play particularly well in their home games against the lesser competition.
Fair point.
They won those games, but man, the scoring droughts and you know, needing the second half to improve the overtime for Ole Miss. So
more turnovers than made field goals for the Rebels in that game.
Yeah. Just
that was just nightmarish.
It was. So that's why, to me, it's not just about the schedule. Mm-hmm. Is it somewhat of a factor? Sure. You know, the Kentucky game, the way Kentucky played, they were going to beat you anyway. It's just a matter of Tennessee contributing to make that, you know, almost 30-point loss. So because they haven't played great at home, even though they've won, I still don't lean on the schedule too much as to where they're at right now with things they need to improve on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's all about Tennessee getting better in the areas that Tennessee needs to improve upon. But as you point out, preseason conference player of the year, Scottie Pippen Jr. So that's who they go up against tonight, and they have to be ready. Now, sometimes your approach can be you want to go at him or just make sure that it's not one of his teammates that beat you.
Right. Their second leading scorer is Jordan Wright, who averages 12.4 points per game. Wright is also their leading rebounder at 6 per game. And Vanderbilt has two quad one wins this year. They've actually beaten BYU and then won at Arkansas as one of their SEC wins. Now, they also have a couple of quadrant three losses. So, you know, you're gonna get the up and down. But, man, Pippen is so good. Almost 2 steals a game, 3 assists per game. You know, 19 points per game, just a terrific player, by far their leader and best player.
And why don't we go ahead and bring you comments from the head coach of the Volunteers, Rick Barnes, as again, tonight, Tennessee plays at Vanderbilt. 9 o'clock is when the game tips off. Coverage starts here at 8:30. So as Coach Barnes took questions yesterday, here's what he had to say about Tennessee and turnovers.
We had three guys that ran to the like we normally do when we or when we're in transition, but they looked back and they've got to see something's going on, and they didn't really react, and so they left Asante and Olivier there on their own, and that can't happen. But those baskets, there's just no defense, and that skews your whole defensive numbers when you give up turnovers, when they're just your offense turns it over and they lead to baskets that you can't do anything about it. But I don't understand it. I think we should be able to handle the ball better than that. But it's everybody being totally locked in. I mean, when we watch the tape, I ask guys, what are you thinking right here? And the obvious answer is they're not. And then you ask the question, what are you thinking prior to the game? Because everything that Kentucky did, we talked about it and expect it. And it goes back to you want players to get lost in the game. And I think that when guys are concerned about other things, whether it's scoring or not rebound, whatever it may be, you still have to have a short memory. You got to go from play to play to play. And to be quite honest, when we ask those questions, they don't have an answer. But the answer simply is you're not locked in to the game the way you should be.
Coach was also asked about, we talked earlier today, Vince, about maybe looking for a different vibe from the team. He was asked, Coach Barnes was, whether or not there could be changes to the starting five.
I think after we get back on the court today, we'll decide what we're going to do there. We're going to see what happens. I mean, again, I said after the game, we've got to get back to, and it's not one player, it's not. I mean, it's consistency, but I will say it, you know, your older players have to be your most consistent players. They have to be. And I'm not just talking John. I mean, yeah, he's one of our older players. The guys and you guys have followed us more closely than anybody. John, Santi, Josiah, Urosh. I mean, he's been around long enough. Olivier, BJ, those guys have been around the longest. And those are the guys that need to and I'm not just talking in the game. I'm talking practice, everything that we do.
As far as consistency, we've heard him already remark about it, but this is what he's looking for, and that is more consistency from Tennessee's more veteran players.
I wish I could answer that. If I did, I'd fix it. You know, we talk to them. We spend a lot of time with our guys trying to get them to understand. And the tough part is when we watch tape and the things that we talked about that we wanted to do, not only as a team but individually, when guys don't do it. And again, their answer is always, I don't know. And they should know. And again, that's on me, that if they don't know, it's on me. But I'm going to keep harping on it until they do fully understand, hey, this is what, when we say we need to do this, we need to do this.
Coach Barnes had this to say when he was asked about Kennedy Chandler.
I don't think there's any question. I'll be shocked after the way the last couple games where he has struggled, that if he doesn't really make a real conscious effort to turn this around defensively. I mean, he's got a he and I have sat on the bus and watched the game coming back. You know, we watched the whole film together, and he sees it. He does. He sees it. I mean, when I said, what do you see here? And everything that you would want him to see after watching it in a replay, he sees it. And now it's a matter of if he can make himself do it.
And then here's what Coach Barnes had to say about tonight's opponent, Vanderbilt.
I think Jerry's done a terrific job. I mean, you look at he's building a program more and more in the way he has. I mean, obviously they've done a really good job developing players that have stayed with him and helped him and really find their roles and their niche. As you know, they shoot the ball well. But they have good balance. They run really good stuff on offense. They're changing their defenses up. You know, you can see a couple different defenses out of them. But certainly, you know, Scottie Pippen, preseason player of the year, and he gets a lot of attention. And for him to keep putting up the numbers that he's putting up is pretty impressive. But he's got some other guys around him, I think, that are really playing the roles that they need to play.
And so comments from Rick Barnes as Tennessee on the road for the second straight game tonight in Nashville.
Yeah, I think a couple of things. One encouraging, one maybe not so encouraging. Not so encouraging is when Rick Barnes is saying, what do you see? They don't really have an answer. Mm-hmm. So that's not necessarily good. But Kennedy Chandler does. And him saying they, you know, on the bus driving back, they – oh, you know, watch tape together or flying back, watch tape together and he sees it, just a matter of applying that. He's also a freshman, so I certainly cut him some slack. He's been their best player, so I don't have a problem with him overall. But got to get more guys. Just that tells me some of their mind drifts a little bit when they don't know, or their mind is so tied up that they can't regurgitate what they're supposed to see or recognize at a certain time. And like he said, then that's on me. I mean, he did say that. If they don't understand it, then that's on me. So that's good. And so that needs to be addressed somehow.
Seems as though a big sticking point right now is adjustments. And whether it be what Tennessee as a staff does in terms of game planning or in the players themselves communicating with one another and reacting to the style of play that's out there on the floor. Start of the season, they were so crisp. It was amazing to watch the ball movement. Different things. So great defensively. Just what they were doing in the games that they were supposed to look good, they looked great. And now, as you've seen that step up in competition, you just haven't seen Tennessee really. Now, granted, it was before Christmas. You had that wonderful effort against Arizona as you handed the Wildcats their first loss. And that was a top five team. Then you had two guys that weren't able to go to Alabama or weren't able to play against the Crimson Tide in Chandler and Fulkerson. And I don't know if there's any kind of lingering aspect from that, but I think it's more that you're in conference play and they've had your pre-conference film and footage to work against. I just think that Tennessee right now has had a bit of a struggle in adjusting to what teams are trying to do and pinpointing as their either avenues of attack, which I do think that Tennessee is missing Eve Pons tremendously. I mean, Vince, you just look at last year and his presence kept guys from really charging the basket. Now it seems as though, for instance, Kentucky, game started with them. It was their guards that were making just a beeline to the basket. They were able to get past their defender. And as you mentioned, with Sheboy right there and his presence in the paint, there wasn't help side. So I think right now Tennessee's trying to find its footing again as a unit, whatever five on the floor, and going up against what other teams have found to exploit.
Well, the shot blocking, you know, we talk about the bigs a lot, and that's a factor in those posts as well, is the shot blocking. It's really hasn't been a big factor. In some years, Tennessee's had guards that were great at blocking shots, too, and really haven't seen a ton of that either.
Chandler's got a good feel for it.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the best plays that I've seen him make this year was a block on a drive to the bucket against North Carolina.
Right.
Their point guard was going in for an uncontested two, and it never got there. So I think that, as you point out, that there are any number of ways, and Josiah Jordan-James, he's got the ability to, whether it's somebody driving to the bucket to block at the rim or take one out of the air, or we'll just say redirect it when the shot is put up from the perimeter. So they have the ability. It's just that Tennessee hasn't had that same presence. They do have awfully sound numbers defensively. I mean, Ken Pom's rankings show that Tennessee is still one of the top defensive teams in the country, even with what they went through at Rupp Arena. So the numbers are there. But again, numbers, of course, are something that look good as you prepare for an opponent. You have to go out there and make it happen to win and impact the game you're about to play.
Yeah, and you know it's gonna take into account all of your entire schedule. So when you're talking about individual statistics, not the KenPom, but some of your numbers may get skewed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee's averaging 10.3 steals a game, 4.8 blocks per game. Honestly, that block number is a little bit higher than I would think.
Yep,
but the steal number is good. And Vescovy, Chandler, Ziegler, their guards on the perimeter, especially when they go to that three-guard lineup, have been getting steals. Problem is the turnovers have been up recently. For the season, Tennessee is a plus 5.5 in turnover margin. That's a good number. But in SEC play, it's a different story.
Very different. I'm John Wilkerson with Vince Ferrara, and we'll remind you that we have two guests. Can't wait to talk to them. John Michael, the television voice of the Cleveland Cavaliers. He'll join us for segment number two next hour, and then practice underway for Tennessee baseball. The head coach of the Volunteers, Tony Vitello, will jump on board with us just after 6:30. So can't wait to catch up with Coach, and it's 4 weeks from Friday.
Beautiful.
4 weeks from Friday. Charleston Southern will be here just as Tennessee, Georgia Southern, I'm sorry. Georgia Southern will be here just as Tennessee opened last year at Georgia Southern. It'll be the Eagles up here to open and return the favor.
So for some warmer temperatures by them.
Yeah. I think we'll probably have some. And if it goes as normally the script does, it would be warmer temperatures. Then you get to game day and then it's just frigid, miserable, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just a lot of fun that the fact that it's here and Tennessee, actually, we can throw this out. D1Baseball.com has Tennessee at number 19 as they have set their preseason top 25. And that 19th designation is the eighth highest rated SEC team.
Even behind Georgia, which surprised me a little bit. Obviously, Georgia has some pieces back from last year, but I think Georgia was a couple spots ahead of Tennessee. But, you know, that poll has a number of teams that were unranked at the end of last year. So they're kind of looking for some teams to have much different seasons. And Florida's another one that didn't finish ranked that they expect a lot of that's ahead of Tennessee also.
Yeah, and I think Tennessee is going to have to prove that it's able to make it past what were just some cornerstones for the team for quite some time. Connor Pavloni behind the plate, Max Ferguson, mostly at second base last year, but of course he could play anywhere. Liam Spence in what he did for the Volunteers at shortstop, and then Jake Rucker manning the hot corner as he did. Just those are significant losses in terms of the lineup and just the presence on the roster, but I also think Tennessee is well-suited to make up for their absences.
Yeah, and we'll talk to Tony about it, but I think they feel really good about their roster. And obviously the pitching staff is always going to be a big determining factor. And they have some arm options, starting bullpen. I still think it's going to be a very, very good team this year.
Yes, I think so as well. And again, ranked 19th preseason by D1Baseball.com. That does it for this hour of Sports Talk. We'll catch up with Coach in about 35 minutes or so. But right now, or I should say up next, it'll be your chance to win with the Sports Fix at 6. Stay with us on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.